This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
I want you to step into a scene with me for a second. Just imagine you are arriving at a Chinese hospital.
Okay.
But before you even walk through the front glass doors, an intelligence system has already read your license plate. And it's allocated your exact parking spot based on, like, which department you're visiting.
That's convenient.
Right. Then you walk into the lobby, and instead of a confusing directory, an AI virtual assistant immediately greets you and guides you to the right floor.
No more wandering around lost.
Exactly. You step into the consultation room, and an AI has already taken your medical history via your phone, cross-referenced your past visits, and is currently helping your primary care doctor analyze your symptoms right there on their monitor.
It's a lot going on behind the scenes.
And it doesn't stop there. Meanwhile, down the hall, a surgical robot is actively mapping out a highly complex procedure. And an autonomous delivery robot is quietly whisking a customized tray of medication up to the inpatient wards.
It paints quite a picture, doesn't it? I mean, it sounds like the opening chapter of a science fiction novel or something.
Totally.
But the reality is, this is happening right now.
And that is the craziest part to me. This isn't a movie script. It's not some tech billionaire's fantasy pitch.
Yeah.
It is the exact blueprint laid out in a Chinese government policy document.
Yeah, issued on November 6th, 2024.
Right. The document is called the Reference Guidelines for Artificial Intelligence Application Scenarios in the Healthcare Industry. And thanks to the translated reference material provided for this deep dive by former lawmaker Kyung Jin Kim, we're going to explore exactly how Chinese hospitals are integrating AI into literally every single corner of their operations.
Yeah, and it is a massive, incredibly dense policy document. Like, to really understand what we're looking at, you have to realize this is essentially a national execution guide.
For the AI Plus initiative.
Exactly. Issued jointly by the Chinese National Health Commission and other key state agencies, it's actively reshaping what a hospital even is, because it outlines exactly 84 detailed application scenarios for AI. 84. Spread across four major domains of healthcare, they are leaving, like, almost no stone unturned here.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit, because
yeah.
84 scenarios. When I first read that number, my immediate thought was just total information overload.
Oh, sure.
Like, if I'm a hospital administrator and the government hands me a menu with 84 mandatory tech upgrades, that sounds like a recipe for a crashed IT system and probably a staff revolt.
Definitely.
How do they even prioritize what to implement first without just, you know, overwhelming the entire hospital?
Well, that's a very practical concern, and the authors of the guidelines clearly anticipated it. They didn't just throw 84 demands at the wall and say, figure it out.
Okay, so how does it work?
The guidelines categorize these scenarios very clearly into manageable modular buckets. You can think of it less like a massive school curriculum you have to master all at once, and more like a smartphone operating system or an app store.
Ah, okay. So the hospital is the hardware, and these AI guidelines are the software store.
Precisely. They separate clinical decision-making from back-end logistics and primary care from specialized surgery.
So they can pick and choose.
Yeah. It gives hospitals a modular way to adopt this technology. Like, a rural clinic might first download the app for diagnostic assistance, while a massive urban research hospital might start with, say, AI-driven drug discovery.
That makes a lot more sense.
And what's truly remarkable is the speed of execution. This wasn't just a theoretical wish list.
Right, because the source material mentions what happened next.
Yeah, if we look at subsequent developments, by March 2025, which was just months after the initial release, the Chinese government had already collected 950 application cases nationwide.
Wow.
950 cases that were successfully utilizing these 84 scenarios.
950 real-world implementations in a matter of months. That really proves they're moving fast.
Very fast.
Let's actually break down some of these major buckets for you listening so you can see how this technology fundamentally changes the patient experience. I want to start right in the clinic and the operating room.
Makes sense.
Because that's where the stakes are obviously the highest. The document outlines what I can only describe as, like, AI superpowers for primary care doctors.
Yeah, this is arguably one of the most impactful sections for everyday people. The AI acts as a highly advanced assistant for primary care general practitioners.
How so?
Well, think about a doctor in a busy primary healthcare institution. They're seeing dozens of patients a day with vastly different complaints.
From a simple common cold to complex chronic issues.
Right, like diabetes or hypertension. The AI integrates directly into the doctor's workflow. It cross-references the patient's real-time symptoms with massive databases of clinical guidelines to offer immediate diagnostic recommendations.
And it actively reviews prescriptions before they're finalized, right?
It does.
But how does it actually do that better than the doctor? Like, aren't doctors trained for exactly that?
They are, but the AI does it by processing variables much faster than is humanly possible.
Give me an example.
Okay, let's say a doctor is prescribing a common medication. The AI instantly checks the patient's latest blood work, specifically their kidney and liver function.
Okay.
And it compares that to the metabolism rate of that specific drug.
Oh, wow.
So if the patient has slightly diminished kidney function, the AI flags the standard dosage as potentially harmful. It suggests a lower dose while also scanning for any obscure drug interactions with, you know, the five other supplements the patient takes.
So it's acting like an invisible safety net, catching the tiny details a tired human might just miss the end of a long shift.
Exactly.
But then you jump from the primary care clinic to the operating room, and the technology gets significantly more intense. The document details how AI is used for complex surgeries, specifically gastrointestinal or hepatobiliary procedures.
Right, which deal with the liver, gallbladder, and bile ducts.
Yes. And in those high-stakes surgical settings, the AI relies on what the document calls multimodal data.
Yeah, multimodal data.
I'm going to need you to translate multimodal data for me because that sounds like pure medical jargon.
Fair enough. To put it simply, multimodal data means the AI isn't just looking at one single stream of information.
Okay.
A human doctor typically has to look at a blood test, then switch over to look at an MRI scan, and then, you know, read a pathology report.
Right. One thing at a time.
But the AI ingests all those different modes of data simultaneously. It layers the lab tests over the medical images and the digital pathology reports.
So it's seeing the whole picture at once.
Exactly. By synthesizing all of that at once, it can recommend the safest surgical pathway. It actually helps identify key nerves and tiny blood vessels on a screen.
So the surgeon knows exactly where to cut.
And critically, where to avoid.
Which brings us to a part of the document that blew my mind. The 3D quantification.
Oh. Yeah.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The AI is taking a standard flat 2D scan, like a CT scan for lung cancer or a brain aneurysm, and turning it into a topographical map.
What's fascinating here is the physical mechanism of how it actually does this.
How does it work?
So the AI is trained to recognize the specific basal density of a tumor versus healthy tissue.
Okay.
It goes through hundreds of slices of a CT scan, outlines the abnormal tissue in every single slice, and then stacks them together.
Just builds it up piece by piece.
Yeah, to build a highly precise, rotating, three-dimensional model of the lesion, it calculates the exact volume and spatial relationship of the tumor to the surrounding organs.
So it's basically providing the surgeon with a fully mapped 3D GPS of the patient's internal organs before they even pick up a scalpel.
Exactly.
For you listening, what this really means is faster, more accurate diagnoses, and a massive reduction in human error. We're talking about eliminating the chance of a surgeon accidentally nicking a hidden blood vessel because it was, you know, obscured on a flat 2D scan.
That's the goal. It provides a baseline of consistency and spatial awareness that is incredibly difficult for human beings to maintain under the physical exhaustion of a long surgery.
We've been talking about the absolute cutting edge of modern surgery here, 3D mapping and multimodal data.
Yeah.
But what fascinated me most in these guidelines is how they're applying this highly objective, futuristic tech to a discipline that is notoriously subjective and thousands of years old, traditional Chinese medicine or TCM.
It is a striking contrast on the surface, isn't it?
It really is.
But when you look at the mechanics of it, it makes perfect sense within the Chinese healthcare ecosystem. The document details how Chinese hospitals are using AI for four examination diagnostic equipment.
Just to clarify for the listener, the four traditional examinations are inspection, listening and smelling, inquiry, and palpation.
Right.
Historically, a master physician relies entirely on their own senses to do this. They feel your pulse, they look at the color of your tongue, they listen to your breathing.
Yeah.
It relies heavily on human interpretation.
Exactly. But now they're replacing that subjective human interpretation with objective AI sensors.
Like what kind of sensors?
We're talking about highly sensitive pressure pads that can perform a pulse diagnosis. By measuring the exact amplitude and rhythm of the arterial wave.
That is wild.
And they're using high-definition cameras with computer vision algorithms to conduct a tongue diagnosis, analyzing the exact color gradient and coating thickness.
Wow.
The AI then synthesizes thousands of these data points to evaluate a patient's overall body constitution.
It takes the art of medicine and turns it into pure math. But my absolute favorite detail from this entire source material is the use of bionic electronic eyes, noses, and tongues.
Yeah, the bionic sensors.
They're using these bionic sensors to automatically authenticate and evaluate the quality of raw Chinese herbal medicines.
Right.
But like, how does an electronic nose even work?
It sounds like magic, but it's actually pure chemistry and pattern recognition.
Okay, break it down for me.
An electronic nose is essentially an array of chemical sensors, often using something called mass spectrometry.
Right.
Every herb gives off specific volatile organic compounds, gases that we perceive as smells.
So it's basically sniffing the chemicals.
Exactly. The electronic nose detects those specific chemical signatures and compares them against a massive database of verified herbal profiles.
That's incredible.
It can instantly determine if a batch of ginseng is authentic, if it was harvested at the right time, and if it has degraded in storage.
It's like taking a 2,000-year-old master physician, someone who spent 50 years learning exactly what a specific root should smell and taste like, and giving them a supercomputer brain.
That never gets tired.
Right. That never gets tired, never catches a cold that ruins their sense of smell, and can evaluate 1,000 herbs a minute with perfect chemical accuracy.
That is exactly the shift taking place. And this objectification of ancient medicine leads to a core philosophy in PCM that the AI is actively supercharging.
Which is?
The concept of treating pre-disease.
Treating a disease before it even becomes a disease.
Yes. It is the ultimate form of preventive healthcare.
How does the AI help with that?
It uses all this data, the pulse readings, the tongue analysis, the chemical evaluation of the herbs, and compares your current state against a massive database of patient trajectories.
So it sees where you're heading.
By spotting minute deviations in your health baseline, it can generate highly personalized health preservation regimens. It might recommend specific dietary therapies, meridian massage, or seasonal conditioning.
Combining this ancient wisdom with modern big data tracking.
Exactly, to keep you healthy, rather than just fixing you once you're severely ill.
Spotting the whisper before the scream. I think that is a brilliant application of the technology. But, you know, that this objectification of data doesn't stop with the individual patient. It scales up to the entire hospital building.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if you've ever been in a massive urban hospital, you know it's basically a small city. You cannot run the hospital of the future with a clipboard, a pen, and a whiteboard.
You really can't. The operational logistics of a mega hospital are staggeringly complex, and the guidelines devote a huge portion of their 84 scenarios to just keeping the lights on, the floors clean, and the staff sane.
The behind-the-scenes stuff is so fascinating. The document lists autonomous delivery robots moving medical waste and fresh linens through the halls. And these aren't just automated carts following a magnetic strip on the floor, right?
No. They're powered by AI computer vision and LiDAR. Similar to a self-driving car.
Really?
Yeah, they actively map the hospital corridors in real time. If a gurney is blocking a hallway, the robot recalculates a new route instantly.
That's so smart.
The document also talks about intelligent disinfection robots.
How do those work?
These robots use data from the hospital's electronic health records to know exactly which rooms housed patients with highly infectious diseases.
Oh, wow. So they customize the cleaning.
They independently adjust their cleaning methods, perhaps using stronger UV light or specific chemical sprays based on the specific pathogen that was in that environment.
That is incredible efficiency. And maybe most importantly for the human staff, it outlines AI systems that predict workforce needs.
Right, the predictive scheduling.
Yeah, they analyze patient flow data in real time, looking at how many people are walking into the emergency room versus how many are scheduled for surgery. To dynamically adjust staff scheduling, specifically so nurses and doctors don't burn out.
Which is a huge problem in healthcare.
Huge. But the predictive power of AI extends beyond the physical hospital walls into the realm of public health, too.
Yes. This is where AI becomes a shield for the general population. The document explains AI's role in intelligent infectious disease monitoring. This is often called syndromic surveillance.
How does that actually work in practice?
Well, instead of waiting for a doctor to manually report a strange case to the government, natural language processing algorithms constantly read through anonymized doctors' clinical notes,
okay,
as well as outpatient records and pharmacy purchases across hundreds of hospitals.
So it's constantly scanning everything.
Right. If the AI detects a sudden, unusual spike in prescriptions for fever reducers and clinical notes mentioning unexplained pneumonia in a specific district, it flags it immediately.
Spotting the trend.
It spots the cluster of a new virus days or weeks before human epidemiologists would even know there are dots to connect.
Wow. And on a more everyday level, the source material mentions it's also being used to track down children who've missed their national immunization program vaccines.
Yeah, that's a very practical application.
The AI scans the national registry, identifies who missed a dose, and automatically guides catch-up shots via voice calls and text messages to the parents.
This does raise an important question, though, about how all this data is ultimately used. Which brings us to key point 21 in the logistics and management section.
The intelligent design of commercial health insurance.
Exactly.
Yes, I wanted to dig into this because it directly affects the listener's wallet. How does an AL language model actually change how we pay for healthcare? And honestly, if an AI is setting my insurance rate, what data is it actually looking at?
It is a fundamental shift in the business model of insurance. The guidelines explain how healthcare large language models, highly specialized versions of the AI you might use on your computer, are being used to assess user health risks.
Okay.
Historically, insurance is priced based on broad demographics.
Right.
If you're a 35-year-old male, you get thrown into a risk pool with every other 35-year-old male, and you all pay roughly the same premium.
Right. It's a blunt instrument.
But the AI models analyze vast amounts of real-world medical data, regional health trends, and potentially even lifestyle data if integrated with wearables to calculate specific risk at a granular level.
Down to the individual.
Yes. It understands the nuanced interactions between your specific health history, your environment, and your behaviors. Mm. This allows insurance companies to dynamically design and price highly personalized commercial health insurance products.
Wow.
It moves from demographic pricing to behavioral and predictive pricing.
So it could make insurance much more accurate and potentially cheaper if you're healthy.
Potentially, yes.
But it fundamentally relies on digesting massive amounts of personal data to build those risk profiles. It's a mechanical trade-off between personalization and data hunger.
It really is.
But that brings me to a huge structural question. If the AI is doing all of this, if it's writing prescriptions, mapping 3D surgeries, managing the robots, and pricing the insurance, what does the human doctor actually do?
That's the big question.
And more importantly, how do we even teach medical students to operate in this new world?
Well, the document addresses this directly in its educational scenarios, introducing a concept called patient virtual humans.
Okay, paint a picture for me. Because when I hear virtual human, I just think of like a video game character. What does this actually look like for a medical student in China?
Picture a medical student sitting in front of a monitor. They aren't clicking multiple choice answers or reading a textbook case study. They are interacting, often via voice, with a highly realistic digital avatar on the screen.
So they're talking to it.
Yes. This avatar is a digital twin model powered by a healthcare large language model that has been trained on thousands of real-world pathology reports.
Wow.
It doesn't just recite symptoms, it simulates actual physiological signs. Its breathing might appear labored, or its speech might be slurred.
So the student actually has to interview it.
Yes. And because it's powered by an LLM, the avatar has unique communication styles.
What do you mean?
The student might encounter a virtual patient who is extremely anxious, or a patient who is confused, or a patient who is actively withholding embarrassing but critical lifestyle information.
Oh, that's fascinating.
The student has to practice their bedside manner, ask the right probing questions, and formulate a diagnosis based on how the AI avatar reacts in real time.
That completely changes the learning curve. They get to practice complex diagnostics and human empathy on an AI that actually pushes back before they ever touch a real patient.
It's a game changer for medical education.
But what really strikes me about all of this, from the virtual patients to the bionic noses, is the timeline. We're not talking about some vague, far-off future. The source material outlines some very hard deadlines, specifically in the October 2025 implementation opinions.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the Chinese government is not just suggesting these technologies. they're mandating their rollout with incredibly aggressive targets.
What are the targets?
The policy sets a goal to establish what they call vertical large models for clinical specialties by 2027.
Meaning what exactly?
This means creating highly specialized independent AI brains dedicated solely to specific medical fields, like a master AI for cardiology and a separate master AI for oncology.
Got it. And then there's the most ambitious target, mandating the universal application of AI-assisted imaging and clinical decision support in all secondary level and above hospitals by 2030.
Think about the scale of that. By 2030, any hospital of a certain size in China must have these systems fully integrated into their daily operations.
That's practically tomorrow.
It's a formalized national infrastructure project. This document proves that for the Chinese healthcare system, medical AI is no longer a pilot program or a fun experiment in a few wealthy top-tier hospitals. It's rapidly becoming the new baseline standard of care.
So what does this all mean? We've covered so much ground today.
We really have.
We started out in the hospital parking lot, navigated through AI-guided surgical robots that map tumors in 3D, watched as chemical sensors tasted ancient herbal medicines to prove their authenticity, and saw how virtual humans are training the doctors of tomorrow. It's a comprehensive blueprint for a totally new kind of medical system.
And the main takeaway for you listening is that this technological transition is already underway.
It's happening right now.
The integration of AI into healthcare is happening rapidly, and the sheer scale and speed of this Chinese policy document offers a very clear, tangible window into what the global standard of healthcare is going to look like in the very near future.
Which leaves me with a final, somewhat provocative thought for you to chew on. If we are entering an era where a doctor's primary role shifts away from simply memorizing vast lists of symptoms, drug interactions, and diseases, because, well, the AI can do that instantly and with perfect recall.
Right.
And their job shifts heavily toward interpreting those AI recommendations and offering human empathy to a scared patient. How will that change the type of person who chooses to go to medical school in the first place?
It's a great question.
Will the best doctors of tomorrow be the students who can score the absolute highest on a rote memorization test? Or will they be the ones with the greatest emotional intelligence and ability to communicate? It's something to think about the next time you're sitting in a waiting room. Or perhaps the next time an intelligence system assigns you a parking spot before you even pull into the lot. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.